This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib coming up on Africa News Tonight.
After more than a year of wreaking havoc across Western and Southern Africa, fall armyworms have now been reported in most countries in Eastern Africa.
That's VOA's Jill Craig reporting from Nairobi. Details coming up.
Also in Ivory Coast, ex-rebel fighters have ended their four-day mutiny. According to the World Health Organization, in remote northern DRC, out of 20 suspected cases, two have tested positive for the Ebola virus. And a regional drought has displaced more than 500,000 people in Somalia and left the country at risk of famine.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, in Ivory Coast, ex-rebel fighters have accepted a government offer over back pay and ended their four-day mutiny. Gunfire had been heard in Abidjan and Bouake since Friday as the soldiers fired into the air to protest the government's failure to pay bonuses agreed upon in January. AP reports the Ivorian defense minister confirmed an agreement had been reached. However, details of the agreement have not been released. The soldiers are former rebels who supported Alassane Ouattara in 2010 when his predecessor, Laurent Gbagbo, refused to step down after losing the election.
The World Health Organization continues its assessment of the Ebola outbreak in remote northern DRC. It says of the 20 suspected cases, two have tested positive for the Ebola virus. So far, three people have died from the disease in Boswell province, about 1,300 kilometers from Kinshasa. The WHO says the Ebola risk is high within the DRC, but moderate on the regional level and low at the global level. Right now, it's advising against imposing any trade or travel restrictions on the DRC.
A regional drought has displaced more than 500,000 people in Somalia and left the country at risk of famine. A cholera outbreak is further complicating relief efforts, in particular in the southern part of the country, where some villages remain under al-Shabaab control. Mohammed Yusuf reports for VOA from the town of Baidoa.
Bai Regional Hospital, the biggest in the southwest federal state, is filled with patients suffering from stomach pain, vomiting and diarrhea. Cholera has sickened more than 40,000 people in Somalia since December. More than half of the cases have been in this state. Most of the victims have been malnourished children. 5-year-old Fatuma was admitted to the cholera treatment ward last night. Her mother, Bisharo Mohammed, says she cannot lose another child. She says her eldest daughter was suffering from diarrhea and she died 2 months ago in Busley village in the outskirts of Baidoa. She says the girl was 7 years old. Cholera is treatable. The World Health Organization recommends prompt administration of oral rehydration salts. Mohammed says Fatuma is already feeling better with treatment. They hope to be released soon, but they will not be going home. Aid agencies say the areas was hit by cholera and hunger are villages like Busley, which are under al-Shabaab control. Accessing them is a challenge. Fatuma and her family are among the tens of thousands of people who have walked to government-controlled areas like Baidoa to seek help and are now living in makeshift camps. World Health Organization cholera expert Dr. Abdinasser Abubakar says the outbreak is getting worse due to security challenges.
If you look by Bakol and Middle Juba and Gedo, some of those areas where, you know, none of us actually able to access, the death and the case fatality rate due to cholera is very high, and we expect the situation will get worse.
Rains this month in southern and central Somalia have contributed to a surge in cholera cases. According to Bai Regional Hospital Cholera Treatment Ward Deputy Supervisor Salima Sheikh Shuaib, she says the cholera cases were going down, but the past 3 days we have seen an increase in cholera cases. This morning we have received 16 cases. and most of them are children under the age of five. More than 150,000 displaced people are living in the makeshift camps around Baidoa, and more continue to arrive. At the camps, many families do not have plastic tarps or covered places to sleep. Stagnant puddles and mud dot the walkways. There is no regular food provided. Clean water is available, but it's not enough. Medics supported by UNICEF and the WHO are going to IDP camps around Baidoa to provide oral cholera vaccination to children. But Abubakar of the WHO says it is hard to contain the spread of cholera so long as the general humanitarian situation is not improving.
We cannot solve only the cholera. We cannot only deal with the cholera unless we deal with the food insecurity, unless we deal with the water issues, unless we deal with the malnutrition. And I think collectively both, you know, the WASH partners, the health partners, the nutrition partners, the food security partners, we are working very closely, we are coordinating. But again, Somalia, one of the challenges that we are facing is the shortage of resources to support all these interventions.
Somalia continues to report between 200 and 300 cases of cholera nationwide each day. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Baidoa, Somalia.
After more than a year of wreaking havoc across Western and Southern Africa, fall armyworms have now been reported in most countries in Eastern Africa. From Nairobi, VOA's Jill Craig reports on the damage, including how the pests are impacting food security, already rendered precarious from drought and rising food prices.
Timothy Mbaya is a 25-year-old farmer from Western Kenya. He says 75% of his maize crop was destroyed by a fall armyworm infestation in April.
There's nothing we could do because the worms were eating indiscriminately in patches, in groups, the farm. So I had to do away the crops and seek an alternative crop to plant. I chose on cassavas because of this, to make good use of this rainy season so that I don't come out empty-handed.
Joe DeVries is Vice President for Program Development at the Alliance for a Green Revolution in Africa. He notes that fall armyworms were first reported in Nigeria in January 2016 and have spread rapidly, recently landing in Kenya this past March.
We're talking about a pest that literally just arrived this year in this region and is already causing major concern among farmers, partly because they've never seen it before and don't know how to control it, and partly because of the damage that's already occurred in their farms.
Endemic to the Americas, fall armyworms can fly long distances, and females can lay up to 1,000 eggs at a time, according to scientists. They proliferate in tropical climates, making Africa a choice destination. However, experts are still unclear how the pests got here in the first place. Wilson Rono, head of the Crop Production Unit at the UN's Food and Agriculture Organization Office for Kenya, says that the pests are exacerbating the effects of severe drought and rising food prices in East Africa. He gives this example from Kenya.
The price of food, the maize especially, has increased by about 90% over the long-term average in the last few months now. And this is compounded by the drought. 90% increase is because of the drought. Now, with the coming pest, you can imagine the costs rises in cost of food. Now, the inflation, as a result of these increases in food prices, the inflation has risen from 5% last year in April to now about 12% in April 2017.
Rono argues that a broader approach is necessary because fall armyworms don't recognize state lines.
It's not going to be very useful for Kenya alone to control the pest because it flies 100 kilometers per day, so it doesn't know which is Uganda, where is Tanzania. Europe and Asia are not immune because this pest can move up north to Europe through the Mediterranean countries, can move to Asia through the Middle East and so on.
Although the fall armyworm is known to attack more than 80 plant species, in East Africa it prefers maize, a crucial staple and cash crop. Experts say they cannot yet eliminate the pests here, but are promoting short-term solutions as they explore options like identifying predatory insects and developing host plant resistance. Rono says it is estimated that more than 400,000 hectares in East Africa have already been affected, and adds that some estimates project up to a $4 billion loss of African maize without interventions. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
Uganda has launched investigations into allegations of sexual harassment by Uganda People's Defense Force soldiers in Central African Republic. The allegations are contained in a latest report by Human Rights Watch. Catherine Nambe reports from Kampala.
The Ugandan Army, Uganda People's Defense Forces, has started withdrawing from the Central African Republic. However, the record on their 8-year stay in the country is tainted by reports of sexual harassment of girls and women. A new Human Rights Watch report accuses some Ugandan soldiers of sexually exploiting or abusing at least 13 women and girls since 2015 in the eastern town of Obo, where Ugandan forces were based since 2009. HRW has challenged the Ugandan and African Union authorities to conduct proper investigations, punish those responsible, and make sure that the women and girls sexually abused or exploited get the services they need. The Uganda government does not refute the allegations, but promises to investigate them further. Charles Okello Engola is Uganda's Minister of State for Defense.
This is a report which has come as rumors. So we cannot jump into as a Minister of Defense and say, okay, our boys have done this, that, and what. No, these are rumors. And for us, you know Uganda. For us, we displayed our boys. So we are looking into that. We shall take steps, proper steps on those culprits. These are human beings like you. And if they make mistakes, they are not above the law of the country.
Uganda Army spokesperson Brigadier Richard Karemire says the Army has already launched investigations and whoever is found guilty will be punished according to the law.
We have received the report. We can never fail to have some bad apples. So if they are there, we shall definitely pluck them out and take appropriate action in accordance with our laws. They will not have it easy once we get them.
According to law, deployed troops who commit any offense may be returned for trial in Uganda. Karemire says the army is already trying two officers implicated in sexual crimes in Kar. He is hopeful their prosecution will act as a deterrent to other officers intending to commit the same crimes.
But for those we have got in the past, indeed we have punished them, and those very few are undergoing trial in our court martial. We have had two significant cases we are now prosecuting, and those will definitely act as a big lesson for those who are in missions outside or those who will be in missions in future. Because we have zero tolerance on sexual exploitation and abuse, the UPDF.
The Ugandan military has been deployed in Kar since 2009 as part of the African Union's regional task force to eliminate the Ugandan rebel group, the Lord's Resistance Army, LRA. However, the army recently started pulling out of Kar, saying the mission to neutralize the LRA has now been achieved. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
18 past the hour, you are listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. The World Health Organization has released a new report on the achievements and challenges in global health over the past 10 years. VOA's Jody Kapowar reports.
The report is called Healthier, Fairer, Safer: The Global Health Journey 2007 to 2017. Sir Liam Donaldson is the author.
I called it Healthier, Fairer, Safer because it seems to me those are the three important dimensions by which you judge progress in global health. Are populations getting healthier? Are they living longer? Are they experiencing fewer episodes of disease? Is it getting fairer?
He says the activities to improve health occur in a very complex world.
The march of globalization has quickened. There, of course, was a major financial crisis in 2008 onwards. Many parts of the world have seen serious armed conflicts and deteriorating security. And as a consequence of that, there have been many displacements of population, and the biggest number of people on the move through internal and external migration since the Second World War.
In addition, there's climate change, triggering severe weather events, and a greater number of people moving to cities. But Donaldson says there have been very significant improvements in global health over the past decade.
We've seen falls in maternal mortality, falls of mortality in children under the age of 5. Death rate from HIV/AIDS has fallen. Death rate from tuberculosis has fallen. Death rate from malaria has fallen. And to achieve these things, the action has been on a very, very large scale. For example, for malaria, there were 900 million insecticide mosquito nets distributed in Africa over that period of time.
But, he says, there's also work being done by the World Health Organization that does not receive as much attention, such as getting presidents and prime ministers involved in global health. In other words, raising political will.
And that means getting health onto the United Nations' main agenda. So we can look at the so-called non-communicable diseases, obesity, diabetes, cancer, heart disease, those things that do kill people, but often they leave them with many years of life in illness and disability. That's something that's been considered by the United Nations.
Donaldson says the WHO produces big policies that shape the future. One of them is healthy aging.
We know that many more people now are living longer, but what's crucial about those extra years of life is whether they are spent in health or in disease and disability and incapacity. And if we look forward 40 years, 80% of the world's populations over 60s will be in low and middle-income countries, not in the richer countries of the world.
Other major WHO policy efforts include universal health coverage, raising health gains in poor countries to match those of rich nations, and addressing society's attitudes toward the disabled.
There are many other things in the report, concentrating, for example, on the neglected tropical diseases, which affect 1 billion people in 149 countries. Great progress there. 40 treatments for neglected tropical diseases now being given every second in the world as a result of a major push forward on action on that.
The report covers the time during which Dr. Margaret Chan was Director General of the World Health Organization. The next WHO chief will be chosen at the World Health Assembly on May 23rd. It will be the first time WHO member countries will elect the Director General, who will then take office in July. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
The World Health Organization says more than 1 million adolescents die every year, often of preventable causes. That's more than 3,000 per day, with two-thirds of the deaths occurring in Africa and Southeast Asia. The information is included in a new report called Global Accelerated Action for Adolescents. It says many of the deaths are due to traffic injuries, suicides, and disease, including HIV. David Ross is a Geneva-based medical officer and spokesman for the WHO. VOA's William Eagle asked him for more details on factors leading to deaths of many young people.
Road traffic injuries are much more common in adolescent boys and young men. Suicide is roughly the same frequency in males and females, but because of injuries and violence as causes of death in young men, they rank higher in the young women. Respiratory infections like pneumonia are roughly similar in frequency in boys and girls, and most important in the younger adolescents under the age of about 15.
The fact that traffic injuries seem to affect young men more than women, is that because young men are more likely to drive a vehicle or to perhaps be less careful driving a vehicle? Or what is behind that?
Well, in fact, most of the deaths from road traffic injuries in adolescents, so that's under the age of 20, where the adolescent is actually not driving the vehicle, but is a passenger or a pedestrian, and particularly a pedestrian or a pillion on the back of a motorbike. Although, of course, there are adolescents driving, and they do have a higher risk of death than older adults.
Did the report find that causes of death of African adolescents were the same as the causes in other regions?
The major cause of death in adolescents, which is particularly common in Africa, is HIV. And also there is much more of the other infectious diseases like meningitis, pneumonias, and diarrheal diseases in Africa. So whereas, for example, in Europe and North America, deaths from infectious diseases, even in young adolescents, are very rare, in Africa, they're still quite common. And HIV is particularly a cause of death in eastern southern Africa.
In terms of health, the report also found that risky behavior that begins in adolescence can impact their health. What type of risky behavior is the report alluding to?
Well, particularly tobacco and alcohol use, but also lack of physical activity and a poor diet, and also risky sexual behaviors.
We had mentioned that one of the causes of death as well in adolescents is suicides. Is that pretty much common the world over, or is it more pronounced in Africa?
Well, suicide as a cause of death in adolescents is one of the leading causes in most regions of the world, especially in older adolescents. Certainly among girls, I'm one of the potential causes of suicide and self-harming more generally is that one's in an unwanted sexual relationship, be it a forced marriage, for example, or having been raped, for example, or being abused. And intimate partner violence is certainly quite substantially associated with suicide.
What are some of the solutions to this issue of adolescent deaths?
What we need to really solve the adolescent health problem are things which are both done by the health sector itself, the health system, so more adolescent-friendly services so that they use the services, health workers who are trained to deal with adolescent health problems, school health services, but also interventions in other sectors. So within, for example, the education sector, the social protection work in employment, in community-based support systems, even road construction, lower blood alcohol levels acceptable because alcohol has more influence on an adolescent's brain than it does on an adult brain. So it's both, if you like, adolescent-specific programming and thinking of adolescents and the particular needs of adolescents in broader programs. The UN partners have got together with the Global Accelerated Action for the Health of Adolescents report to show countries that we know enough now about what we should do and how we should do it to act now and to really get on top of this.
That was David Ross of the WHO. He was speaking with VOA's William Eagle.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, John Dryden, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, what does the future hold for Liberia? Who will lead the West African nation when President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf leaves office in October at the end of her second term? 2 million Liberians have registered to vote, and nearly half of those are women. What's at stake in Liberia? On the next Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC.
VOAAfrica.com.
On VOAAfrica.com,
The news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
VOAAfrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.